Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When I was a kid, my dad was a cop. Then he was in forensics. Then he was a New South Wales firefighter. This season of Loose Units is called Hot Stuff Coming Through, and apart from having an incredibly cool and stupid name, it's going to reveal the untold side of being a firefighter in Australia. Enjoy.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Loose Units Hot Stuff Coming Through. I'm Paul Verhoeven, and my dad, John Verhoeven, used to be a firefighter, and we're going to talk about some of the stuff he went through. Dad, how are you doing today?
I'm absolutely top shelf.
Top shelf. That's definitely going on the lunchbox. We've had a lot of people saying that they want some good Loose Units merch, and the two choices for slogans that would be emblazoned on things would be Top Shelf and From Arsehole to Breakfast, I think.
I love From Arsehole to Breakfast. I'm not quite sure what it means.
But you make it sound like a cereal, you know.
Let me think about this. Would Kellogg's sponsor From Arsehole to Breakfast?
I don't know. Well, you would need some kind of, like, you could have almost like two different types of cereals in the shapes of our faces, like smiling as you whammed them into your gob. What is that noise outside?
Oh, there's someone doing some tree lopping.
Oh, God. I mean, as a person who used to drive around big trucks, is there like a secret, like a switch you can press or like a kind of, you know how people hide their key in the same spot under like a doormat?
You
is
mean
there
go a secret- out and turn, like, just sabotage? Sabotage?
Oh, sabotage.
Shit. Sabote. Oh, God. Sabotage. Do you mean go out and sabotage all their equipment?
I don't want you to hurt anyone. I just want you to turn it off.
Yeah, no, I can't.
There was actually a great moment. Dad and I had just finished doing a talk over at Nova about the podcast, and we were heading back down to your apartment, and this council worker truck, this big, like, council gardening truck pulls up, and this lovely guy runs out and he's like, holy shit, John and Paul, Loose Units. And
then it was
like,
amazing.
But
the funny thing and weird thing was that he stopped all the traffic. He created chaos.
He did, yes.
Because he didn't care.
Which as a, you know, as an ex-cop, you were perfectly suited to kind of fix, really. He was just creating a problem you could fix. But I guess what I'm saying is, Dad, if it's his truck, just let it go. Just let it run.
I will. And also, Paul, what one needs to consider is that these guys outside doing the tree lopping, there's this really unusual, and some of the listeners will probably know about this and others will not, but there's a technique that tree loppers use, and I've seen really experienced some of the fireys do it. Have you ever thought about when you're up a tree how you'd start a chainsaw? Because it takes two hands. One hand is on the trigger, and the other hand you grab the pull thing.
Yeah,
doesn't sound very technical, but people know what I mean. Like the old fashioned motor mowers. I wonder if they still have pull starts. In fact, in the really early days, like Victor motor mowers.
What are you talking about?
No, just bear with me.
Okay.
You'd get this, like a wooden little handle with a rope with a knot in the end of it. And you'd actually attach the knot in this little weird cutaway section on top of the drive shaft. And you'd wrap this rope around the old-fashioned motor mower and you'd pull it.
Right.
And pull start.
Okay.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, although I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
What's this got to do with firefighting?
Good question. No, but as the listeners know, eventually I do come back to the point.
Well, that's in an ideal, ideal
scenario. But half the fun, I think, and listeners may also agree, hopefully, that it's good fun.
You're not wrong, Dad.
Going on that mini trip.
It's a
because
wacky
let's face it, not a lot of us are traveling at the moment. And to come on a tiny trip with me, it's not, is not quite as...
No, it's one thing to like drift out your window and fly across to Paris or Tokyo or New York, but
actually running on the beach this morning at Manly. It was the sweetest thing, and you know, you see things in life that are sort of, you just see it and spontaneously, not combusting, but this couple were on the grass, and they were doing the weirdest exercise that I've ever seen. They were flapping their arms, lying on their stomachs with their feet in a weird sort of backward position. But I looked down, and just as so quickly, I just saw them. And I said, if you go a bit faster, you'll take off. They laughed.
Okay. Did they believe you?
No, but it was funny. What the fuck's this got to do with anything?
That's anyway, what I'm asking. No, I'm sorry.
But back to the chainsaw.
I guess I have to ask, what does this have to do with firefighting? If the answer is nothing, I'm going to be very upset. It's nothing, isn't
no,
it?
No, that's... Well, that's... It's... We were talking about the noise outside.
Yeah, sure. What I would like to do, Dad, is sort of dive into a story that you told me a couple of months back, but you kind of stopped halfway because you thought it was going to mess me up a little bit. Mm. It had to do with not being adequately prepared for
It's a tough story. I know that the listeners haven't heard any particularly horrific stories, perhaps, you know, like my really, really bad ones.
Yeah.
From before. But I thought I'd pull one out because I was also and mindful of the current situation, you know, with people feeling perhaps a little bit,
a little bit sensitive
about life in general.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to sort of remain relatively chipper. And I just thought that I didn't want to sort of bring the whole show down. Okay. It's like, you know, when we do the live shows and you always say to me, look, Dad, perhaps don't start with something really, really bad.
Intense. Yeah, you want to kind of build up to that stuff, you know? Yeah.
So, if I may use an analogy, I promise it's a relatively short one.
If it has to do with tree lopping, we might have finally got this back on track.
Nothing to do with tree loppers, but the thing is, Paul, that, I mean, when you fly on a commercial flight, the captain and co-pilot, they go through a checklist. That is very, very extensive.
Yeah.
And we're all sitting in the back of the plane just saying, look, for God's sake, let's just get this thing in the air and get to where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
But the pilots, they have an international, set of rules. And each plane, you've got to be certified for. And a lot of these great pilots, they get checked by a check captain every 4 weeks to maintain that incredibly high standard, and everyone's really, really happy at the back of the plane, knowing that they're well trained. But imagine if they decided to skip a few of those little tasks, those now, checks.
Why might they do that?
Well, like, shouldn't.
No, but I'm saying what kind of things can cause
be a situation where, for example, like in Stephen King's film The Langoliers.
Is that Stephen King or Dean Koontz? It's one of those.
No,
two.
Stephen King.
Stephen King, okay.
Where basically, okay, imagine you're on the tarmac.
Yep.
And imagine there's like a virus that actually creates zombies. And imagine the zombies have overrun the airport. Mm-hmm. You're sitting in your comfy seat.
This had better fucking land if.
No, I promise it will. And the thing is, Paul, that.
Yeah.
In that situation with zombies running onto the tarmac, it would be probably quite acceptable for the crew to skip some of the things on the checklist and perhaps just go, you know what, we're just going to take off.
Let me get this straight, Dad. You're saying that it's not okay to skip the kind of tiny important steps in preparing for things unless it's zombies, in which case I understand your stress levels.
I just gave zombies as an example. So my point is that technically, you'd say that there are no excuses to take shortcuts. But would you not want them to take a shortcut if there were, if it was a life and death situation?
Right. I feel like you're reaching Abe Simpson levels of digression here, but please do go on.
Okay, so it's the same in emergency services.
Oh, okay.
You come on shift.
Yep.
If you're the motor driver in the fire brigade, it is your job to check that everything is spot on.
Okay.
That there's oxygen, air, and dare I say it, probably the most important thing, and there could be fires out there that may differ, may beg to differ, but
water?
I think water
yeah.
is paramount. So you're carrying around about 1,800 litres mm-hmm. on the back of an appliance, and that's called first aid, because as the listeners probably know, that's the fire, that's the water you're going to use. So yeah. what happens at a fire, and we've been through this a few times, but let's just go over it once more. The fire brigade get the job, first station responds,
yep.
there's an actual fire, and the two fireys in the back seats will don their breathing apparatus, their CABERs.
Uh-huh.
They will then grab a line of 38. When people hear me say a line of 38, that's simply a 38 millimeter diameter hose.
Yeah.
And they will go straight in under most circumstances, and they'll go into the fire. Okay, they are operating off the first aid tank. So they might have, depending on the pressure, generally the motor driver will give them 400 kPa to start with.
Yeah.
They're inside, they're working away, they're looking for the seat of the fire, as we've discussed in previous podcasts, that sun, that beautiful white glowing ball. And at a certain point, they're going to run out of water. Let's say they've got maybe, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but let's work on the premise they've got 5 minutes of water.
Yeah.
Now, that's nowhere near enough time, particularly if they have to carry out search and rescue. They might hear someone screaming inside that, and then they have to go into the whole, you know, trying to extricate, trying to locate that person.
Yeah.
Could be a young kid hiding in a cupboard, you know, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Now, the poor motor driver, I say poor, he's working under immense stress. Stress like you can't imagine.
And is motor driver, were you ever a motor driver?
Yeah, all the time.
Okay, so you know God, the pressures associated with this.
Probably 1,000 times or more.
Okay.
Now, the motor driver's job is to get water in. That simply means to locate a hydrant.
Yep.
To run, you know, he's got to crack the hydrant. He's got to connect the standpipe. There's a 1-in-2 breaching. He's got to get a length or two of 70, which is twice the diameter approximately of the hose that the fireys inside the fire are working with.
Yes.
And he has to get water into the back of the pump, and then he knows that the fireys have got unlimited water.
Okay.
And they can fight it for... I mean, some fires are fought for days and some are fought for weeks because it's all from the mains.
Yeah.
Okay. At the end of the job... In fact, I sent you a video last week of Darlinghurst that rocked up to a fire. Did you get that video?
No.
Okay. So what happened was the fireys, they went into this job, and the motor driver, once he had everything in order and sort of he can sort of chill a little bit, everything's under control. He's monitoring all the gauges.
Mm-hmm.
He's feeling really, really comfortable. What occasionally the fire will do, the motor driver, is he'll then backfill because they've used a lot of the first aid water, you know, that 1,800 litres.
Yes.
But it's their job to fill. So he will then divert some of the water from the mains into the first aid tank,
uh-huh.
and he knows it's full when it overflows. And what happens is it sort of runs onto the road. You can
yeah.
hear it, you can see it, and he can then shut off that valve knowing that he's got a full tank of water.
Great.
Because what happens is once they finish that particular job and they're heading back to the fire station, who's to say that they don't get another job?
Right, so you want to make sure that... Because if the truck had to run straight out to a job and hadn't been filled, they could find themselves in real trouble.
Precisely,
right?
And that okay. is where the listeners are going, thank God, this is where this story begins.
Oh, shit.
Now, I've known about this story for a long, long time, and it's a really fucked up story, and it's a dear, dear friend of mine.
Yeah. Now, I presume you've been given permission to
tell
this
story. And he has given me permission.
Okay.
Now, he's a very, very dear friend, and I've been aware of this story. In fact, a lot
yep.
of fireys are aware of this particular story,
mm-hmm.
but it's one that isn't discussed in the public domain.
Okay.
For lots of reasons. And I have been asking him for well over a year to give me permission to discuss this story. Mm-hmm. And a few days ago, he said, you can tell the story, but I'm going to change some of the details.
Okay.
For obvious reasons.
Whenever I write the Loose Units books, I'm taking your stories and, you know, changing things up significantly in order to preserve, you know, the emotional safety and the kind of, you know, the people that were involved in these cases. It's, you know, it's a courtesy, and I think it's the right thing to do. So,
yeah. So look, I'm going to tell the story now, and the listeners can listen and just bear in mind that the core facts of the story,
yep,
are spot on. But I'll change certain details, mainly to protect the family.
Okay.
Anyway, let's get on with the story.
Yep.
So it's around about 2:30 in the morning.
Okay.
And two young women are heading home. They're shift workers.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say what they did for a living. That's one of the facts that I am not prepared to divulge.
Okay.
And we're going to say that this particular incident happened outside of Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And they're driving a Volkswagen, a Beetle. And that's fairly pertinent in relation to this particular story. There'll be people out there, as soon as I mention Volkswagen, may begin to cotton on where this story is going.
Okay.
So they're heading home. And for any of the listeners that have ever done shift work, it's a tough gig. But generally speaking, I think it's so embedded in our DNA, and I think that's why you get tired, and that's why shift working presents a whole array of problems insofar as it's tough.
I remember doing the mid-dawns on Triple J for years and years, and, you know, I would start at 11 p.m. and then I would finish at 6 a.m., and there's something that happens to your brain during that hour, and you just sort of... It's a really weird place to be. Your body and mind are not
exactly
firing at all cylinders.
It can also take you into pretty dark places.
Yeah, you get very negative.
You can get a little bit depressed. You can think about your family. You can think about worst case scenarios. And imagine being in emergency services. I've already discussed with you and the listeners that sensation of getting up at 2 or 3 in the morning. And you know, when I was a relieving fireman, I'd be sitting in the back of some fire engine. No one's talking. The windscreen wipers are battering. It's midwinter and you're off to a shitty bloody... I mean, just it's shitty for the fire. Imagine, give a thought for the poor people that's house is on fire.
Yes.
Or the terrible, you know, carnage at a motor vehicle accident, whatever. Anyway, these girls are heading home. The Volkswagen... the driver lost control for reasons we don't know.
Okay.
Occasionally, one might surmise that perhaps she was tired, because that's fairly common. I remember when I used to come home from night shifts in the police force from North Sydney, and ironically, in a pretty sort of sad sort of way, I owned a Volkswagen Beetle, and occasionally I'd fall asleep you'd stop at the red light on a Sunday cold morning.
Yeah.
And then I'd be woken, if I was lucky, by someone tooting me. And if there was no one around, I know that sometimes I'd slept at the intersection, fallen asleep through multiple sets of lights.
It's in the book. Yeah. There's stories about you falling asleep after long, long night shifts in the book. Yeah.
And it's tough, you know. And when you're an emergency service worker or a pilot working at, you know, going through all those time zones, I mean, we're absolute mental... concentration is paramount. You've got to hope that people make the right decisions.
In this
particular, and these two girls, they went off the road and into the bush, and the car flipped over. And fortunately, a guy in a truck was driving behind, and he saw the lights go off the road.
Yeah,
and he pulled up and he went into the bush. And one of the girls had been thrown out of the Volkswagen, but she was relatively uninjured. This is before mobile phones. Plus, even if we had have had mobiles at the time, they probably wouldn't have worked due to the remoteness of this location.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the truck driver assisted the girl out onto the road, and she was pretty good. And the truck driver, he then drove. He left her there because she was pretty well uninjured. And he left her there. But the problem was that the driver, the other female occupant,
yes,
she was trapped by the arm. Not major. The only injuries she had sustained were that she'd had a trapped arm. There may have been a break or crush injuries, but not. She was totally conscious. Truck driver managed to make his way to a phone box, and he dialed 000. This is back in the day when you had red phone boxes everywhere. And from memory, I'm quite sure the 000 call was free. Eventually, the fireys headed out to this location. There was no lighting, no street lighting.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of in the bush. And they saw the young girl, the passenger, and she waved them down, and the fireys got ready to go in. When they went in, my friend, he was on the branch, and he, which means he dragged the hose into. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. It was a Volkswagen Beetle, and for listeners that don't know, there was a fairly extensive period of time in the late 60s, early 70s, when Volkswagens, the old 6-volt Volkswagens,
mm-hmm.
They were notorious for catching on fire.
Yes, I'd heard this.
Mm. I had a few VWs in my teens and early 20s, and one of my VWs was a green one. It caught on fire. The fire started because the battery used to be under the back seat.
Yeah.
And it was just so weird. But it happened a lot with Volkswagens. And it happened on this particular occasion where, because it was a Volkswagen, we were very... I wasn't in the fire brigade at the time, but my colleague, my friend, he was talking to the girl.
Yeah.
And they couldn't move the Volkswagen because it was pinned up against a tree, so they actually couldn't free her until they got a lot of sort of pretty heavy duty gear in.
Yeah.
And back in the day, at the time this occurred, they would have been waiting for the police rescue
mm-hmm.
to arrive.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And I'm telling this story very, very deliberately and cautiously because I don't want any major information in terms of the facts insofar as I'm being very deliberate in thinking carefully as I talk.
Yes, I understand.
I do not want anyone to cotton on to where it happened.
Well, to be fair, I mean, normally you kind of bound and explode through stories. You're very, you know, you just roll through them. But obviously this is you're being very tentative and very careful. And I think people appreciate it.
Because I'm also very grateful to my friend for allowing me. Because I'm not in a it's kind of a story that has some very, very sad consequences, but it's also a very good lesson in if you're working in a certain environment, always make sure you check your gear. That's the upshot. So my friend, he was with the girl, giving her, he was consoling her.
This is the girl trapped by the arm, yeah.
The one trapped. And, as it has to be restated, there was nothing at all wrong with her apart from being trapped.
Okay.
And there are plenty of situations where people are trapped. They extricate them and they're perfect. Slight problem. The Volkswagen caught on fire and it began to burn. And my friend screamed, shouted out to the motor driver for water. And she kept screaming and the car's on fire and he kept screaming and the car's burning. And cars don't take that long to completely be engulfed, particularly a tiny little car like a Volkswagen. When you consider everything inside, there's the fuel tank, there's the lining, everything's plastic, and the car was completely engulfed, and he was standing there, and there was no water, and
so someone had forgotten to fill the.
Hang on. Well, what Sorry, happened God. Was my friend watched as this young girl was burnt alive, which is pretty fucked up. And, it's just a nightmare. And and then once the whole thing was, had finished, eventually he got water because also it was in bush. So, that would have then in turn created possibly a bushfire.
Did it?
No, because they eventually ultimately got some water and then my friend put the fire out. And putting out a car fire, might I say, is at the best of times a nightmare.
Why?
They are so intense. They are incredibly intense. And there's just, the tires and the tires explode and, they reach and the glass melts and... Yeah. But the thing that was really bad about this, well, there are lots of things that were bad, but what happened was, you remember how I told you about the time when I was at that job when I pulled the kid's arms off?
Yes.
Remember that story?
Yes.
Well, but I only mentioned that because we required counselling and the senior officer came down and just basically... said, well, you're not getting counselling and you're a bunch of idiots and you don't need it and you're not going to get it on my shift and, what are you, a bunch of, all that crap.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit of a thing back in the day because it was perceived to be a sign of weakness. I mean, just think about all the emergency service personnel in Australia and probably all over the world that up until relatively recently never got any counselling or any help or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the Anzacs that came back in World War II and they all just stepped off the boats and just went home and that was it.
Why do you think there is that stigma that talking about your feelings and talking about bad things that happened is somehow a sign of weakness?
Well, it's not anymore, I don't think. In fact, I think it's really positive and particularly with men.
Yeah.
I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do, and I think if the more men that do it, particularly men in high profile, like football stars, like really boxers and racing car drivers and people that are perceived to be really, really very macho, I think if they can get out there and discuss it, I think it sets a really good example and it breaks down all the stigma.
I mean this whole show and the books and everything, the live shows, it's all about you basically talking through things that happened to you that were, I would say, objectively traumatic in many ways. Have you found, do you feel lighter after having done Loose Units for, about two years now? Are you feeling?
I fortunately, I'm a very positive person. Mm. I mean, the thing is that after this particular job, but still at the scene, a very, very, very bombastic, incredibly senior officer in the New South Wales Fire Brigades.
Mm-hmm.
Bear in mind, this is decades ago. He had a bit of a reputation for being, a fuckwit, and he was an asshole. Right. And he came down to the scene and he was just carrying on about what's all the fuss, and he was just being totally he had no empathy,
right?
And he didn't sort of relate to what was happening. And my friend. who was like, so the fire's completely out, and yeah. there's just the charred remains of this girl, but her arm, which was black and charred, was sticking out from under the car, and this very, very senior officer was walking towards the car, oblivious to the fact that maybe it's a scene of a terrible incident, and it'll be a coronial inquiry, and there'll be big investigations. And he was walking towards the car, and my friend actually looked down and was quite aware of what was about to happen, and the guy accidentally kicked the arm.
No.
Yeah, and it snapped off.
No.
Yeah, he kicked it off.
What happened to... What did they do? Like, what...
Well, it's one of those things that's just... That happens, and my friend just looked and thought, you know, he tried to kind of warn him, but...
There's got to be repercussions for this shit, right?
Yeah, that's partially why I'm being fairly vague about the whole thing, relatively speaking. Yeah, so that was a bit of a stuff up, and as it turns out, the motor driver had assumed that the first aid tank was full,
but it wasn't.
Now the procedure in the fire brigade. And yep. probably fire brigades around the world, is that the shift, the motor driver on, for example, the day shift, mm-hmm. one of the things that he or she has to do is fill the first aid tank. And then, of course, when the motor driver comes on for the night shift, they then get the pump to work, put it into gear, and always, as far as I'm concerned and know, protocols, probably universal fire brigade protocols for motor drivers, is that you get the first aid to work and you check the gauges and you can see quite clearly whether the tank's full, and you don't. And if it's not, then you fill it at the station.
But whose
responsibility? Well, yeah. It's the responsibility of the shift that's gone off to have filled up the first aid tank.
Yep.
But it's also the responsibility of the oncoming motor driver to check that it's full.
That was my question.
For some weird reason, and we don't know the circumstances, they turned out to that emergency at 2 a.m. with no water on board, which is so terrible, because the other bad thing about that story is that if you're out in the bush, which is where they were,
yeah.
the chances of finding a hydrant are none and Buckley's.
That's correct.
So you'd have to wait for a backup second yep. vehicle, second yep. responder. But if a car's alight in the bush, you know, and imagine the extreme trauma of having to go through that particular story. I mean, it's tough for me telling the story.
My question, I guess, and I'm sure that listeners will be wondering the same thing, and that is, what happens to the people who fucked up? Because at this point, a girl has died needlessly because people weren't paying attention. So who pays for this? Who... Do you know what I'm saying?
Probably no one. Probably.
Why?
Well, you know, some things in life are just... people try to forget these things. But you've also got to appreciate that... you know, the other people at that... Look, it's not my story. It's not my...
But I'm saying...
No, but I'm just saying that I've got permission to tell the story, but I've told it in fairly circumspect ways.
I guess what I'm saying... Yeah, I just think that it's important that people feel that if someone in a position like that does the wrong thing, then...
Well, the chances of that happening nowadays and nothing yeah. coming of it are almost impossible. And that's the problem with... looking at the cold, hard facts in court, which has to happen, but it's a big thing for prosecutors and defence counsel and a jury and a judge to be judging and trying to come up with the best possible result. Imagine actually being there. And that's one of the problems. For example, when police shoot someone, okay, the trauma at the time, and then you hear it all the time, well, why didn't the police do this? Why didn't they, like, you weren't there. You don't know things are happening so quickly.
Yeah. Did you ever see anything where you thought, okay, I hope there's some comeuppance, and there were? Did you ever see that kind of thing pan out?
Paul, I, in the police force, as you know, I got to see some extraordinary things. And occasionally, look, I don't believe all the chickens come home to roost, but I also believe that I kind of actually do believe in karma to a degree, kind of. But life's a funny thing. I mean, it's a mystery. And but these are all stories out there. There are lots of things that happen in the emergency services that will never, ever be told. But it's not just emergency services. I mean, in all occupations, things happen. And and people weigh up, you know, is it worth... I mean, look what happens to whistleblowers. I mean, people honestly would be considering quite often, is it really worth it? Yeah. Is it really worth ruining my life for the greater good? And yes, you might expose something, but you're miserable for the rest of your life. And so is your family. Like, honestly, and these are big things to consider.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I was given that story, and I really appreciate. And my good friend, he knows. I mean, I just had to wait patiently for over a year for him to say I could tell it. And I was quite shocked a few days ago when he said I can tell the story.
Yeah. Mm.
But the thing is, Paul, there'd be quite a few stories like that out there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a big, these are big topics.
Yeah.
So again, in terms of how things are going, you know, with people in general at this time, that's why I was slightly reticent also to sort of bring people down. But as long as people can, you know, can benefit from hearing the stories.
I think they can. I think they can. I think it's really helpful to know that these, you know, it's unbearably tragic, and I'm sure a lot of people will be very upset, but at the same time, it did happen, and things like this do happen, and I guess it's important for everyone to be really vigilant. You know, I'm sure there's people in emergency services who have seen incredible things and just haven't felt comfortable, you know, coming out and saying anything. But
Think about the poor emergency service people that are with this guy. It's like when I was under the train with that lady. You know, I was talking to her, trying to sort of comfort her, but it's like you're with them and you're comforting, but you really do know.
Yeah.
You actually know that they're not going to survive.
Yeah.
But it's your duty. And who wouldn't try and make them their last minutes? I've often thought about if ever, and this is a little bit kind of morbid, but kind of interesting. And I've often thought if I was hit by a truck or a car, and I was unconscious and I knew I was pretty, pretty bad. You know, sometimes, and I'd love to hear from particularly emergency service people or people that have been at the scenes of pretty bad accidents, imagine that there would be people that think they're going to die and perhaps do die. Yeah. But can you imagine if they actually say to someone passing by or helping them, look, I'd like you to, like, these are my last wishes or words, and will you please convey to someone that I love them or whatever? I mean, that's pretty. And there are police and fires and ambos and just members of the public that are, you know, at that special time.
Yeah.
And it's really important. It's a weird thought, but...
I think this has been a pretty intense episode of Loose Units, but I think a very important one. I hope everyone's doing okay out there. Obviously, emergency services is an incredibly complex... You know, it's a very complex job, and God, I have so many feelings to process after that episode. Dad, thank you to you, but also thank you to your friend who felt, you know, safe enough to be able to share that story with you. I think that's really good. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Loose Units, Hot Stuff Coming Through. We are going to have another Loose Ends episode up the tail end of this week. It's the weekly bonus episode where Dad and I basically, you know, answer your questions and sort of just hang out and make sure that you're all doing okay during the quarantine. So make sure you tune in this Friday for more Loose Ends. If you haven't already done so, head back and re-listen to all of our old episodes, because the back catalog is getting really expansive. And what's going to happen is Dad and I are going to be referencing cases from previous episodes. So if you want to catch up on the whole thing, it's right there for you now on iTunes and Spotify. We hope you're doing all right, and we will see you very soon for more Loose Units.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.